All right, welcome back. This is the last session of sharing the Dhamma today, as far as I know. And thought maybe we could reflect a bit on Hiri Otapa, which is Pali, for the two qualities that the Buddha said are the guardians of the world. And the traditional translation is a little challenging for most of us. It's Hiri as moral shame and Otapa as moral dread. Bhante Sujato translates Hiri as conscience, which I think is a lot more true to what comes to mind, rather than having some kind of feeling of shame, that it's really our conscience guiding us. And he translates Otapa as prudence, so a care that we take in our decisions and actions. The idea of Hiri and Otapa being the guardians of the world is, it's kind of a beautiful, to my mind anyway, a beautiful way of thinking about these qualities, that our conscience, you know, gets pricked when we do something that is a little bit outside or at the edge of our range of what we feel is appropriate, you know, what we want to be, what we want to do. And that's what the Buddha said was extremely valuable, to be able to reflect on our actions and acknowledge them. And then he said that's the basis for our growth and development, our becoming more skillful. And of course, more, let's say, susceptible to awakening. And Otapa being prudence, that's the, instead of dread or fear, it's really the wise understanding of what our choices could lead to, and a very strong, that also includes apamada, this wise forbearance or reflection, and then the otapa is this, I really don't want to do anything that's going to bring harm. I don't want the results of that, the harmful results. I thought I'd share a sutta with you. I'm going to share the screen. Conscience and prudence. So the name of the sutta is Hiri Otapa, the Hiri Otapa Sutta. It's in the numerical discourses, the number of discourses, 765. So there are seven things here, not just two, and it's actually the same kind of chain of cause and effect that we see in other places in the suttas, where the Buddha talks about the transcendent chain of dependent origination, or the transcendent chain of dependency. So one condition being vitally important, crucial to the development of the next thing. And he starts out in the negative here. He starts out by saying, when there is no conscience and prudence, one who lacks conscience and prudence has destroyed a vital condition for sense restraint. So we're not going to be careful about what we take in to the mind if we don't have our conscience and our prudence on board. And if we don't have sense restraint, the Buddha says that's a vital condition for ethical conduct. So what we're talking about today, you know, to really have those beautiful morals in place that cause us to be completely trustworthy and harmless in the world. I mean, in terms of to the degree we can be harmless, obviously just living creates harm, but this is a different thing. This is the kind of harm that creates karma, that, you know, we can't help the kind of, you know, harm that might come to insects as we cross the road, you know, but we can avoid intentional harm. And so this, but it, we can't do it without having our sense restraint, our restraint of what we take in, and also, you know, what where our impulses actually are part of it too. So even though this is a vital condition, it doesn't mean it's the only condition. But if we don't have it, if we don't have the conscience and prudence, we won't have the sense restraint and we won't have the ethical conduct. And he says here that where there's no ethical conduct, we've destroyed the vital conditions for right samadhi. So our meditation is not going to go very far. And I've certainly seen this. You know, if you think about the reasons that Westerners come to the Dharma, usually it's, you know, suffering or a desire to meditate, or, you know, there are various reasons. Mostly it's to try to relieve suffering in some way, one way or another. And maybe they get a lot of instruction, or they go to meditation retreats and they are focusing on meditation but not paying much attention to their sila. And this happens and has happened quite a lot in the past and in the West, and it's still, I think, the case of Ajahn Gunha will say that we're focusing too much on samadhi. And he said people, you know, they go into samadhi, but then when they come out of it, they're playing on their phones. Or they come out of it and they're fighting with people. And he said then, you know, this is really not right. And I questioned, so the right immersion samadhi is not really going to be fulfilled if we don't have the sila in place. It's not going to come far enough to really give us the knowledge and vision, which is the next condition that's relying on the immersion. And from there it's on to disillusionment and dispassion, which is a vital condition for knowledge and vision of freedom, so awakening. Now this sequence leaves out a couple of steps that we might find in other places. It actually kind of puts a few things together, like disillusion and compassion. Dispassion are usually two separate conditions. Depending on the dispassion, depends on being disillusioned, etc. But it's the same idea, and it's interesting how much the Buddha uses this. You know, when he said that dependent origination is really so key to understanding the Dhamma, and everything comes from causes, and we can investigate those causes. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to jump down to the positive chain here. Oh, first, let's look at the simile. So if we haven't been able to fulfill these conditions, I think I passed the first one. If we haven't been able to fulfill these conditions, He says, suppose there was a tree that lacked branches and foliage, its shoots, bark, and softwood and heartwood would not grow to fullness. And that's what he's saying. If we don't have conscience and prudence, we're not going to have sila. We're not going to have awakening. And then he says, that goes into the positive. When there is conscience and prudence, a person who has fulfilled conscience and prudence has fulfilled the condition for sense restraint. And that person who has sense restraint fulfills the condition for ethical conduct. Ethical conduct fulfills the condition for right immersion or right samadhi, which fulfills the condition for true knowledge and vision, which brings about being disillusioned and dispassionate, which leads to awakening. So I just thought I'd share that. And then the tree that has branches and foliage, its shoots, bark, softwood, and hardwood would grow to fullness. It's kind of interesting to think about it in that way. Whatever it is we want from the Dhamma, we really need to have the ethics. And then to think about what it is that helps us to live with a really strong, vital morality. That sense restraint is so important. The conscience and prudent, the mental attitude. And it involves being able to see, you know, how's this going to turn out? Where does it lead? You know, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you have a really strong desire to do something, get involved in something that isn't good for you or good for someone else. But there's such a strong desire to do it. And if what we're taking in through our senses is, you know, examples of people acting in that way, then we're not going to be as likely to restrain ourselves. And of course, a lot of times this is how we learn the hard way, by creating a lot of suffering. But we can also learn without doing it. We can learn vicariously, thank goodness, and through the teachings to, you know, put these conditions into place. And like I said, I really like going back to that image of Hiri Otapa being the guardians of the world. How to make our world safe. You know, we're not going to make samsara safe. But there is a safety that comes in our own development of kamma. And I referred earlier to my cousin-in-law Harry's experience. You know, you may have all heard that talk, I don't know, but it's like, you know, being sent out on 27 combat missions in the Vietnam in the jungle as an infantry person, and not in one time encountering the enemy. You know, this comes from a long standing desire, which was clear to him at the time in this lifetime, to not kill. You know, just something like that gives us the kind of view into the power of keeping precepts and developing the depths of sila. So those are some thoughts. I don't know if you have any questions or comments. Or dilemmas. No. That's good. Well, in that case, let's meditate. And that's kind of how it works, isn't it? If we're clear about how we want to conduct ourselves and we know whether or not we've made an error and we correct it, and we try to live with as much happiness and joy and kindness as we can, and, you know, work with the habits that we have that still cause us some amount of discomfort, then we are free to deepen the practice in our meditation.
Thank you.
It was very nice spending the day with you. Yeah, for me it has felt like kind of a low-key day. I haven't been, I don't know how the teachings came across, but for me I feel really low-key. So, not a lot of, I was going to say not a lot of energy, but that's not quite it. It's just, there's a calm that I'm enjoying, and it leads to less to say, and I hope that's okay with everybody. Yeah. Good. Well, my friends, I think we'll close the session, and I hope your evening is great, and I look forward to seeing you soon again. I think I'll just chant a little blessing for you. May you have every good blessing. May all the devas protect you. By the power of all the Buddhas, may you ever be well. May you have every good blessing. May all the devas protect you. By the power of all the Dhamma, may you ever be well. May you have every good blessing. May all the Devas protect you. By the power of all the Sangha, may you ever be well. Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.